If you were with us last week, then I threw this gigantic challenge at us and ended with, I don't know what we do from here on out. So that's what I spent all this week trying to figure out. What do we do? If last week was all infrastructure and concept, then let's see if we can dig into a little bit of the practicals this week. So let's start with something practical. I'm going to give you two qualifications about this person I want you to think of. All right, so think of someone in your mind who A, really just annoys you. That's number one. But the reason they annoy you is because it's something you're not allowed to talk about. It's a little sensitive. And you're not even proud of this, but you know deep down it's true. They annoy you, well, frankly, because their skin color is different. Or they're so keen to talk about their culture all the time. They annoy you because you know their politics and you don't share them. They annoy you because you don't understand their sexuality. And you're really annoyed because you don't understand their gender. Or maybe their religion. Or just their life choices. And you're not allowed to talk about it because you might get labeled, because it's going to come out the wrong way, because you're going to be, you just can't talk about it. And this person, and I hope you're thinking about someone specific in your mind, this person is your outcast. And maybe it would be to our benefit if we wondered, do they think about me the same way that I think about them? We're looking at an outcast today in the book of Mark, chapter 2 this time. And his name is Levi. And the passage starts like this in verse 13. Mark chapter 2, verse 13, it begins, "Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and as he usually did, he began to teach them. And as he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth." I imagine there was a pause. I imagine there was a locking of the eyes. I imagine Levi tried to look down and look away. And I imagine Jesus just stood there and smiled at him. And something passed between them. And in two words, Jesus says, "Follow me." And then Levi actually got up and followed him, which earth-shattering pivot. And we're going to explore that in just a little bit. But I wanted, by now you're familiar with my preaching style and how I see scripture. So let's imagine what we can about our man Levi. And what do we know about his background? We know he was a tax collector. And that's all that we need to know. There's a whole universe behind that job description. He was an outcast to his family and to his community. There was great shame associated with being a tax collector for him and his family. And I was shocked to find this note in one of the commentaries. It says, it describes tax collectors this way: "For assessment purposes, tax collectors were allowed to search anything except the person of a Roman lady. Any property not properly declared was subject to seizure." Did you declare that ham sandwich? Well, then it's mine. In Egypt, tax collectors were sometimes so brutal, they were known to beat up aged women in an attempt to learn where their tax-owing relatives were hiding. That is several orders of evil. Ancient documents reveal that when harvests were bad, on occasion, an entire village, hearing that a tax collector was coming, they would leave town and start a village somewhere else. This is an actual historical commentary. Wait, did you say a tax collector was coming? Quick, everybody, pack up. The entire village would pack up and just like move. The entire village. So brutal, so vicious, so backed by the Roman military were these tax collectors. You can understand why the Jews would consider Jewish tax collectors blood traitors, that they were thieves among their own people, that they would steal from their mother, because they often did. So Levi was an outcast. But let's presume that Levi's at a roadside toll booth, he's not in like a massive complex. Let's assume that he's not that evil. He's mostly an okay guy, but he's still a tax collector. So he's still bringing shame upon himself and his family name and everyone who carries his family name. So I have a question for you. Did you come from a family that practiced shame? Everyone who is out there who was Asian just said yes. And we love our mothers and our fathers, but man, in my childhood, we were constantly told, behave this way, speak this way, dress this way, present yourself this way. Why? Because what would someone say? What would someone say? I grew up being so afraid of what someone might say. And even worse, the only place in St. Louis where I grew up, the only place where I was actually among other, like a mass of Chinese people, was in church. And the place that I had to behave the most was in church, because someone in church who loved me, they might say something. It just seemed rather ridiculous to me. Why would Auntie whatever say something? Why would Uncle, they love me, I know them, they're not gonna say anything. Mom, it's fine, my hair looks fine.
Maybe grandma, maybe grandma's gonna say something to other grandma and they're gonna like, oh, look at you.
If grandma whatever is gonna be all judgy and gossipy, well then that's on grandma, that's her sin, that's nothing to do with me. Why do we endure shame culture inside a church? Because someone might say something? And frankly, grandma's got nothing to stand on because we know about her life and her life is just as messy. So what is this whole thing about?
In Levi's case, it looked like that shame, it looked like that outcast status was one directional. The family had to sever ties with him. It was the only way they could operate in society with a tax collector. They had to say, no longer do you belong to our family. We just need to exist on our own. Otherwise, you taint all of us. The little one cannot go to school anymore. We cannot go to the market anymore. I can't go get water anymore. I can't go to the village anymore. I can't go shopping anymore. We have to. You are now apart. You are now cast out. We presume that if they offered, Levi would be with them, that he would accept family membership again. So let's translate that today. In our culture today, just say yes or no in your head. In our culture right now, in this century, in this decade, for where we are right now in 2021, would you say, in all honesty, that the church is actually casting people out? Maybe you lean more towards the, we're accused of casting people out. Maybe you know of someone for whom we need to go say, we are so sorry, we ask your forgiveness. And frankly, you've heard me preach about Gen Z often enough. Our outcasts don't really want back in. So, whether we're actually casting people out, whether that's just our reputation, it's out there. So we have some work to do to correct all of this as the church. And we can't wait for some organization or some higher body. It has to be us. Let no one ever say that anyone from Pathways was ever cast out. Let no one ever be able to point a finger at any one of us and say that that person said something hate-filled and toxic and cast me out. Let no one ever say that that person offended me and never apologized. It has to begin with us. Because I'm guessing that the churches that actually do manage to cast people out, I'm guessing they're pretty appearance-focused. I'm guessing they're pretty concerned about that whole shame culture. I'm guessing they're pretty fake. They're all about appearances. You all know the story. I'm sure some of us have done this. In the car going to church, the kids are screaming, you're upset with your spouse, you're just all red and huffy, and then you get out of the car and you go into church and everyone smile! Because we cannot ever let anyone know that we might be having an argument. What would they? Because good families don't do that? Like, that's ridiculous. Do we want to be a fake church? Do we want to be authentic? Do we want to have someone greet us at the door? Man, you look, what's going on? Are you okay? You want to talk this out for a little bit? Can I pray for you? What do you need? Can I help you? We want to be real and authentic, and I want to be vulnerable so I can share what I'm going through so that you can help me out. I want you to pray for me, and I want to pray for you, and I want to carry each other in our burdens, and I want to celebrate on the mountaintops together, because fake is just flat. Nothing's ever wrong, so there's never any wins, and there's never any celebrations, and it's just people pretending, and it's just everyone feels like an outcast because everyone feels like that person's on the inside and I'm not because we're all just wearing masks. You know what a great litmus test is for an authentic church? It's the prayer list. Is our prayer list just full of medical things? You know why medical things are okay to share? There's no moral value to them. It's okay to share those things. But if someone were to share something real, something authentic, well, then someone might know something. Someone might say something like, can we help you? Can we support you? Can we encourage you? Can we walk this through with you? Can you do this? If you're at home online, click on that connection card. If you're here, open that YouVersion app, click on that connection card. Would you dare to share something real to put on the prayer list for this month? Something of a mess that you have in your life that you just want support, an ear, encouragement, just someone to pray for me about. If you have had a recent celebration, would you share that with us as well? Maybe you can't make the Wednesday prayer meeting that's fine, but maybe you can sign up to get those things. We're gonna use that prayer list as our litmus test for our community. Do we walk with each other? Do we know each other? Do we lift each other up? If I'm asking you for the fourth month in a row whether your wrist still hurts from that tennis accident you had back in 2018, I don't know you. And that's not real. That doesn't feel good to anyone. So please, use that connection card and risk it. Otherwise, we're all just outcasts.
The clip you're about to see is from the video series The Chosen, and it's free online. And if you go to the website landing page, you can find free access to The Chosen. And you're going to see the scene where the tax collector deals with the consequences of his being an outcast. The Chosen.
If there's any left when they come back, I'll give it to you.
Now the heavens and the earth were completed in all their hosts, and God completed on the seventh day his work that he did. And God abstained on the seventh day from all the work he did. And God blessed the seventh day, and he hallowed it, for thereon he abstained from all the work that God created to do. Blessed are you, Lord our God, ruler of the universe, who creates the fruit of the vine.
You have lovingly and willingly given us.
You have lovingly and willingly given us your Shabbat as an inheritance in memory of creation.
This is his life. This is the tax collector's way. It's by himself. He's cut off from his family. The weekly Sabbath meal of shalom is not extended to him. He's cut off from his society. And in seven words, in verse 14, in seven words, and he got up and followed Jesus. Think about this for a second. There really was a guy named Levi. He really did exist. He really did have a family. And at some point after his education, or during his education, because you had to be educated, he went to his parents and said, "I'm thinking about becoming a tax collector." And think of the argument that then ensued. Think of the series of arguments and conversations. Think of the tension. Think of the ongoing struggle. Think of everything his parents get that you are going to cause us X, Y, and Z. This is going to happen to you, A, B, C, and D, and E. Do you really want to do this? Think about everything he had to fight through to make this happen. Because in his mind, in his heart, this was the way for him. This is what he wanted to do. He would not be swayed from it. No matter what anyone older said, no matter what anyone else said, he was going to do this thing. And he was willing to sacrifice it all for this job. But it was more than a job. If the job cost him this much, this became something incredibly more. Today we might even call it a core identity. Everything about him was colored by this job. Everything about him, everything from him, everything to him was shadowed by this label of being a tax collector. There was nowhere he could go. There was no one he could interact with. There was nothing he could do. This was everything. It touched everything in his life. And so he chooses, at seeing Jesus, to give it all up. In just 7 words. All the years that he had fought with his parents, all the years that he'd been separated from his family, he turns and says yes to Jesus. I am not saying that all identities can be changed. But in our identities, we can choose to follow Jesus in the way that Jesus says gives us the most life. So the question for my students and for our church is, which is more important? Do we follow this thing that I have decided, the thing I've been so invested in, this identity, do I follow that? Or do I accept Jesus, who just says, follow me? It is not, I'm not making light, it is not an easy thing. It continues, the passage continues in verse 15. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, and there were many who followed him. But when the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? This passage drives me crazy. It seems so obvious to us the Pharisees were just dead wrong. How heartless, how blind, how fill in the blank. And then I see Jesus looking at me, and I'm like, oh. Think about this for a second. Who were Levi's guests? It wasn't his neighbors. He can't interact with them. Our guess is that they were people who shared his core identity. The other tax collectors. The other outcasts. And so we can translate that verse from the New Testament of love your neighbor. Maybe we can translate it today in the same way that Levi did with your work neighbor. Because I'm guessing, I might get it right half the time if I were to go through each one of us, I'm guessing that the outcast in your life is probably someone you spend a lot of time with, probably someone you work with. By the way, this isn't a passage where Jesus is preaching. He is not teaching. This is a meal, so he's hanging out. And by the way, he's got his disciples, he's got Levi, he's got all his friends. They're elbow to elbow. They're touching each other, they're hanging out, they're sharing food, they're sharing laughter. There is communion going on of fellowship and spirit and heart and soul and laughter and joy and significance. So I think about the outcasts in my life. And I wonder whether I just talk at them or when I talk about them, or do I welcome them into my home? And do I offer to live life with them and to walk with them and to love them unconditionally? You all know this, Bible scholars. You know that eating with someone meant endorsing them, meant approving of them, saying, this is my person and I am theirs, we are on equal footing, this is all good. But it did not mean that you agreed with the parts of them that you disagreed with. Jesus clearly did not agree with everything they were doing and yet offered fellowship and love and acceptance. We know that he was not okay with the sin in their lives. A long time ago, maybe a handful of years ago, which is an eternity in student ministry years, I was working with a student who let me get close enough to them, and they with me. We'll call them Winter. And Winter had gotten close enough with me where they were sharing their life struggles and their identity struggles. And Winter was pursuing the beginning of reassignment surgery. And they confided in me and they told me these things, even though they knew my difficulty with it. Even, I was like, can we slow this down? Can we delay this? Can we give yourself more time to think about this? Can we? And they were, I know you love me, but I'm going to do this. I need to do this. And I understood that the pain in their life was real. And when they told me that, and when I found out that no one my age was going to be with them during the procedure, I mean, it tore my soul. When I said, do you want me to be there? And I was telling the story to my accountability group of pastors, and even among this group of guys whom I love and who love me, I was expecting some kind of question or rebuke or something. Like, when I was telling the story, I finished and there was a moment of quiet. And one of my friends just very quietly said, that must have been really hard. And then I started to ugly cry, and I was, you know, all my frustrations. I love this kid. I don't know how to help them, etc. The point is this. We can love people fully and not agree with everything about them. Jesus did it. Does it all the time. Does it with us. Does it right now. And he asks us to do the same thing. The outcast in your life, it's probably going to cost you something deep to learn how to love them. And you'll be better off for it. I may not agree with a lot of the things my students do, but if you want to criticize them, you've got to go through me first. Verse 17, on hearing this, Jesus said to them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Jesus is genius. We take this for granted sometimes, that he is the master of all language, that he is the creator of all thought. And he took this, and there is genius here. Look at this. He talks to the religious authorities and uses medical terminology. Genius. Let's play this out. Imagine one of us breaks a leg. How many of us would move backwards and avoid them and call them outcast? Broken leg, broken leg! Someone's choking. We all run out of the room. Oh, someone's choking inside! When someone's in trouble medically, you run in to help. You run towards them to be a part of it. You offer, you can get in trouble if you don't. It's against the law not to. And I don't know if there may be some medical people in the room. I may be getting this fact wrong. You can text me quietly later. I think that in a lot of cases in the medical profession, I think you have an obligation to be with those who are sick. So my question to us is, when did the church forget this about our own obligation? When did we consider ourselves acceptable? And someone else, someone out there, not acceptable? There's something really just fundamentally horrible about the concept of righteous and not when it's used as a label, when it's used as a weapon. There's something really ugly about the concepts of those of us who are in and those of us who are out. There's something sinful in the way that we make up rules about Jesus that don't actually fit with what he said or did. And there's something terribly wrong with our message if our culture thinks that Jesus' family is toxic and hateful and prejudiced and phobic and secretive. It's graduation Sunday. Let's take you back to a little test time just because it's fun to do that. So here's a little SAT. You remember those SAT tests like A is to B, so therefore C is to whatever. Let's play that little game. Put that up on screen. All my graduates are like, oh my gosh, Jonathan, you're killing us. All right, so what's the relationship? Jesus and sinners is the same relationship as doctors and the sick, which is the same relationship as the church I thought about this all week long. And I'm sure Pastor Eddie and Paul, who are far more wise, I'm sure they have the exact answer, but I struggled with this answer all week long. The best I've got so far is the church and those without loving community. If that's what it actually is, I don't know if I would pass the SAT if that's really what it was. But I do know that if that is the answer, that's not what we're known for. So we have some work to do. But again, Jesus is genius. Look at Jesus' genius again. He used a medical term to a religious professional because, think about this for a second. It's not as if doctors just hang out with you when you're sick. It's not as if they just don't do anything. Nor do doctors only hang out with those who were formerly sick. Doctors help those of us who are sick right now. So it is with Jesus. There is always welcome and fellowship. And there is always healing correction as well. He always does it in this amazing way of love and grace, but there is almost always corrective truth. When I wrote that part of my message, I had to take a look at myself in the mirror and say, do I have any change in my life? Do I have any growth in my life lately? If you were to put me on the spot right now, would I say that yes, this has been friction for me in the past, but God has got me through it, and this is where I'm celebrating now. I have grown, I have changed. Because I'm really walking with Jesus. And if I cannot say that, I don't know, maybe I've just been walking with religion, I guess, instead of Jesus himself. Maybe I've just kind of stop paying attention, and if that's where you are, then it's time to renew that relationship. There's nothing, there's no judgment here. It's just like, hey, get back on. Let's do this together. Because if we are walking with Jesus, then he's changing us for our good, for our benefit, one by one and as a community together. All right. Don't actually do this. I'm going to ask you to do something, but don't actually do it. Just like imagine you would or wouldn't. All right, so if you are clean of all sin, please stand up. Don't stand up. I'm not looking. Don't stand up. If you are clean of sin, please stand up. That was a trick question. You should all be standing up in your mind. If you follow Jesus, then yes, you are clean of all sin. The sin you're about to commit right now, forgiven. You are all clean. You can all stand up. If you need Jesus to be continually healing and restoring and working with you, please stand up. Don't actually do it, but please stand up. That should also be all of us. We are the sick in here and out there. There is no us or them. The only one who is them is Jesus. He's the only one different from us. And yet he calls us family. And yet he calls us welcome. And yet he calls us loved. So if you are hearing this message, then he is calling to you by name. And so we, your church, we beg you, do not stand in your own way, please. And do not let any of us stand in your way. Jesus is asking you to follow him. If this is a decision you want to make today, maybe it's a decision you want to renew today, then please do so. And let us know. Use that connection card. We want to walk this through with you. We want to support you. We want to encourage you. This isn't an isolated thing. We walk with Jesus together, no matter where you are starting from, no matter how long it's been, no matter where you are, we do this together. And maybe we start with having meals. Maybe we start with inviting the outcast into our life. Maybe we start with just praying, God, help me get the desire to hang out with the outcast person. I don't even want to do that. This person is so antagonizing to me. You can ask for the desire. You can ask for the will. That's a good prayer. But we do this together. In your email inbox, there's a bunch of discussion prompts or meditation prompts. It's in the YouVersion. These kind of conversations, this is going to be a years-long journey. But I want to do it together. I want to do it with you. I want to do it with us. Let no one ever say of Pathways that we stood in the way of them and Jesus, but rather, in fact, that they found Jesus among us. Let me pray for you. I'm thinking about that dinner and just the tone of celebration it must have been, and just Levi inviting every single person he knew, and seeing the same shame on people's faces, like seeing the same shunnedness on their faces, and just being so overjoyed with, like, I get it, but still I want you to meet Jesus, come hang out. I think about that overwhelming joy, that infectious joy, and I hunger for that among us. I want to hear more stories of Levi. I want to hear more stories from us that say, I wasn't following him, but now I am, and my life is different. I want to hear more requests to get people through messes. I want to share more of our story of my messes, and I want to share the mountaintops, and I want to celebrate, and I want to put people together, like, oh man, that mess, I know someone who went through that mess last year. Let's help that, figure that out, that connection. I'm so afraid, God, that someone out there has labeling themselves as an outcast because of something I said or I did. And God, I beg you for forgiveness for that. We beg you for forgiveness for that. Sometimes it's not even the things we said or did. Sometimes it's the absence of the things that we said or did. We know these are not easy things. Sure, the person I don't know and I just want to get together with, that's a neutral thing. I've got nothing against them. They've got nothing against me. That's an easy thing, God. It's the people that make me clench inside that I need help with. It's the person who sees me and clenches inside that I need help with. We've done a little damage to your name, God, and we ask your forgiveness for that. And yet we live in great hope that you can restore it. We live in great hope that you can be true among us. We live in great expectation, God, because we ask that you will find us worthy to receive those who need help, that we can be of service, that we can be of encouragement, that we can be helpful, that we can introduce people to you again or for the first time. We don't let our past dictate our future. And we give you our future, and we ask that you make us into an authentic place that people know each other and they know you and there is love. There is difficulty and there is grit and there is conflict and there is tension, but there is love. Thank you, Father, for calling us yours, for asking each of us to follow you. And all of us who have answered, we say, amen.